Chapter 2. At the control shed's other end, a shapely young Rin female sat near the middle of a wall of mostly dark displays, cradling a child in her lap. The colony's resident hut, Rhonda Basadi Diori, lay snoozing along the near wall. His long, tan-colored tail twitched. Piani. Han Solo stepped into the main room right behind Jason. We need a line out. The smile faded below Piani's chitinous beak. Rin were such sensitive body language readers that she was probably closing in on what had them worried.
Out system? She asked.
Yes, Jason said. Can you raise the relay repeater? We need to get a message to my sister with Rogue Squadron. Piani eased her sleeping child away from her shoulder, then laid him in a padded cargo crate on the floor.
I'll try, she promised. But you know, Admiral Dizzlewit. Sit down. Have a veggie.
She motioned toward a sideboard, where several small dark fungi steamed beside a hefty pot of calf. Veggies were easy to raise. Seed a shallow tank with spores, wait a week, and come back with a net. They were becoming standard refugee fare. Jason wasn't even slightly hungry, but Han grasped one between thumb and forefinger and nibbled. Steamed, unspiced veggies were unspeakably bland, but the Rin matriarchs had taken to hoarding their herbs.
Solo!
Rhonda awoke from his nap. He rolled over and ponderously pulled his upper body into the air.
Why are you here?
Jason had tried to get along with Rhonda. Raised as a spice merchant, sent by the huts to run slaves for the Yuuzhan Vong, Rhonda had defected at Fondor. Supposedly. Getting a message out, Jason said numbly. A Jedi knows no fear, he'd been taught. Fear is of the dark side. Fear for himself he could thrust aside. But for Jaina, he couldn't help being afraid for his sister. They were linked at an uncanny depth. Still young, relatively light, and lithe enough to move under his own power, Rhonda slithered closer. What are you doing here? Han demanded. Rhonda puffed out his sloping chest.
I told you. With my parent Borga defending Nal Hutta, with only half the clan's support, and pregnant with my sibling at that. Where am I? Stranded, as shipless as one of these idiot vors. I am willing to stand communication watch day and night. That way. I will hear any news from home and free up your workers for—
We'll talk about it, Han interrupted. Piani, what— Scowling, the Rin hurled her chair away from her set.
I can't even get through to Dizzlewit. He left orders. No civilian use of relay without authorization, she mocked. So I applied for authorization.
She shook her long, sleek mane of hair.
I can notify you as soon as I get it.
Han glared. He and the Duros Admiral Derez Wut had ended up crosswise twice before his first week on Duro ran out. Admiral Wut hadn't even tried to pretend he felt hospitable toward refugees. It had been hoped that the Yuuzhan Vong wouldn't be interested in a planet that was nearly dead. Selkor, searching the core region for a place to locate millions of war refugees, had struck a deal with the Duros High House, one of the few remaining local governments that still seemed willing to accept refugees at all. Displaced people could help reclaim its surface, bring abandoned manufacturing plants back online, and take over the food synthesis plants that still fed Duros in their orbital cities. Duros who had worked groundside could go home. Refugees with military experience, it had been argued, might even help defend Duros' vital trading hubs, including one of the New Republic's top 10 remaining shipyards. except that the refugees weren't volunteering for military service in anything like the numbers Watt anticipated. Commanding the orbital city's overlapping planetary shields, four squadrons of fighters, and the Mon Cal cruiser Poesy, Admiral Watt provided the refugees some cover, even as the orbital cities retooled for military production. With the Fondor shipyards lost, and all the other main military shipyards such obvious targets, the New Republic was hastily decentralizing military production. Unfortunately, most of the New Republic's other warships in this area had been redeployed to Bathaui or out the Corellian Run. Jason had heard that the Adumari had attempted a flanking attack on Yuuzhan Vong positions up near Bilbringi. He hoped it was true. Jason eyed Piani's comboard.
How's the cable to Gateway? Could we get them to send out a signal faster?
Thanks to Selkor's official presence at that nearby settlement, Gateway reportedly had a dependable uplink, even an outlink. Insulated fiber cables connected the two domes, but Duro's only surviving fauna, mutant Fefsa beetles, found fiber cables perfectly tasty. Duro's corrosive atmosphere was too murky for line-of-sight transmitting or satellite bouncing. Predictably, Piani shook her head.
Gateway's scheduled to send out a cable rider in 2 days.
Gateway was bigger, just older, and much better established than this settlement. Better organized, Jason guessed. Not that he meant to criticize his dad. Han was giving Settlement 32 his all. 32 maintained a pipeline that provided Gateway with water, which was reclaimed from an ancient numbered pit mine. Gateway maintained the communication cable and supplemented 32's food production. Han thrust his hands into his pockets and eyed Jason, raising one eyebrow.
You're not chasing Minox with a flitterfly net?
I hope I am. Jason fingered his hair back behind his ears. I didn't want to get you worried. We're at war. Everybody's worried. The moment passed without either of them mentioning Chewbacca, and Jason drew a shallow breath of relief. These days, nearly everyone had suffered at least one loss. Piani's mate hadn't reached Gindine's capital city in time to catch an evac ship. He was likely dead, or worse. They all had to carry on.
What can I do to help?
Rhonda slithered closer.
Nothing, Han snapped.
He turned to Jason.
Tell me if it's important. If you need this checked, I'll see what we can raise on the Falcon.
He gestured toward the dome's main entry. A caravan's worth of ragtag ships had been hauled from the landing crater by mammoth cross-terrain crawlers. Equipment courtesy of Selkor, designated for reclamation work, and parked under tarps, protected from corrosive fallout. The security guards had just turned Metza's young clanmates out of that area. Jason's worry for Jaina struggled with his administrative concerns as his dad's assistant. For about 3 seconds.
Yes,
he said, glancing guiltily at Piani, who belonged to Metza's clan and wasn't much older than the offenders.
It's important.
Right. Han pointed at Rhonda. You stay here. Let me know what you hear out of Nal Hutta.
Depend on me, Captain.
Rhonda plucked a veggie off Piani's hot plate and dropped it whole into his mouth. 12 minutes later, Jason perched on the Millennium Falcon's high-backed co-pilot's seat. Han whacked a bulkhead, not in the joking way Jason had seen him do it so many times, but angrily.
Hey, Han growled. Fossil! Gimme generator. And I don't mean tomorrow.
And in its inimitable way, the Falcon produced a glimmering array of lights. Han dropped into his own seat and flicked 3 switches.
Give her a minute to come up. Right, Jason assured him. I know, was what he wanted to say, but he understood. Han had recovered enough from Chewie's death to have the Falcon modified, including better air scrubbers for ferrying refugees, and a non-reflective black exterior that Chewie would have howled over. But he'd never installed a standard co-pilot's chair. Just being on board the beloved hunk of junk made Jason slightly nervous. Jason eyed a wire bundle that hung from a half-opened bulkhead. Han and Droma came out here now and again. Tinkering, Han called it.
Therapy,
Droma whispered. They waited in silence. The weeks when Han's grief had overwhelmed them all drifted up into Jason's memory. He'd happened into a cantina when Han had gone looking for Oblivion, and on a worse night, he'd heard Han scald Leia, using words that never should have been spoken and could hardly be forgiven. Jason had never mentioned that night to his mom. She probably hoped Jason had forgotten. Jason doubted his dad remembered even saying them. He hoped his mother could somehow forget. Pain wasn't always a bad thing, though. Jason almost wished Jaina's pain would blast back into his awareness. At least that would mean she was alive. They might find out in a few minutes. A cascading rhythm of beeps rang in the cockpit as the repeater frequency came alive. Han slapped a tile on the bulkhead.
Solo here, in the Millennium Falcon. Call is for Coruscant, New Republic Military. I want Colonel Darklighter's office.
Then they waited again. Jason, Han said softly, what scared you off from using the Force? 2 years ago you were as gung-ho as Anakin. I haven't seen you levitate anything since you got here. Jason gripped the arms of Chewbacca's chair.
It's complicated.
His dad wasn't criticizing. He just didn't understand. He'd already said he was glad for Jason's help, but now that Jason had bailed out of the larger fight, he was falling farther and farther behind his Jedi siblings.
Try me.
Han's eyes bored into Jason. Jason had told him what happened at Centerpoint. The powerful hyperspace repulsor and gravity lens had responded to Anakin's touch all right. It reactivated just as before. And at that moment, the Yuuzhan Vong fleet, the one that the New Republic had hoped to lure to Corellia, appeared out of hyperspace at Fondor instead. Han's cousin, Thrakken Sal Solo, insisted that the mighty shield should be used as an offensive weapon. He tried to bully Anakin into firing at the Yuuzhan Vong across the vast distance between systems. Jason begged Anakin not to take the shot. Firing that weapon would have been the ultimate aggression. Anakin yielded to Jason. For one moment, the brothers shared a true moral victory. Then Thrakken seized the controls. He blasted the Yuuzhan Vong battlegroup and decimated the noble flotilla that Hapes had sent to the New Republic's aid, thanks to Leia Organa Solo's diplomatic efforts. The Yuuzhan Vong retreated. The surviving Hapens fled home, and now Thrakken Sal Solo was being hailed as a hero.
I could have fired Centerpoint without hitting the Hapens, Anakin had insisted.
Jason had resisted believing him for almost a week. Then the self-doubts caught him. Maybe Anakin could have done it all. Destroyed the aliens, spared the Hapens, saved Fondor. When did aggressive defense become the aggression that was forbidden to Jedi? Keeping only his lightsaber, Jason found passage from Coruscant to Duro. If he couldn't fight alongside Uncle Luke and the others, maybe he could at least help his father manage refugees. Now, surely he was on the right path. I only know that you can't fight darkness with darkness. That didn't explain anything. He tried again.
So maybe a Jedi shouldn't fight violence with violence either. Sometimes I even think that the more you fight evil, the more you empower it.
Han Solo opened his mouth to protest.
It's different for us, Jason insisted. If we use the Force aggressively, that can lead to the dark side. But where does strong action become aggression? The line keeps blurring, the console beeped, rescuing him.
Rogue Squadron, a tenor voice rang in the cockpit. Colonel Darklighter's office. Captain Solo, is that you? We were just trying to raise you.
Jason's heart plunged through his stomach.
Yeah, it's me, his father growled. We're checking on Jaina.
Good timing, the voice answered. This is Major Harthas, by the way. Jaina's X-Wing has been destroyed in a firefight. She had to go EV. A fellow pilot brought her in.
Injured?
Legs, chest. Bacta ought to take care of it.
Han grunted as Jason exhaled in relief.
Her pressure suit held, but she was close to an attack cruiser, one of ours, when the drive blew. She got a massive mag field exposure.
Jason's blood turned icy.
Will she recover?
Han echoed his question into the pickup. The voice hesitated.
Tentatively, yes. We'll update you as soon as we know. We're also trying to raise her mother. Is Leia with you?
Isn't she back on Coruscant?
No, Captain. Selkor administration seems to have lost her.
Lost her? Han echoed sarcastically. Sorry, I can't help with that.
Jason flicked the console's edge.
I could stay out here, he offered. I'll try to find her.
Han's eyes focused on something in the distance.
Sure,
he said. The pain in his voice reminded Jason that things were not well between his parents.
You do that.
Leia Organa Solo glanced into a dark corner, where her young bodyguard Bespacan stood like a darker shadow. She hadn't taken on a planet-wide project since... Was it Bespacan's homeworld, Honegger? She sat at the head of a long synthwood table. Surrounded by bickering scientists, she would have liked to cradle her head in both hands, plug her ears, and demand that they stop acting like children. Duro did that to people. Conditions here were appalling. Still, with Borsk Felia clinging to power on Coruscant, this was one way she could shore up the New Republic, protect the Jedi's reputation, and wear herself out so thoroughly that every night she'd dropped onto her cot too exhausted to worry about her own scattered family. Over the past year, she'd been bounced from system to system, caught up in on-again, off-again administrative and diplomatic work, wherever the New Republic's advisory council pretended not to send her. Even if she was starting to feel like a non-person, this Duro project might be the most significant job she ever took on. To remake a world in these terrible times would be an enormous victory. Her reconstructive meteorologist clenched a fist on the tabletop.
Look!
The scientist growled, glaring at the huge furry Tals sitting opposite her.
There were excellent reasons for setting our domes on the dry side of these ranges. The worst toxins fall with the rains. Any settlement placed on a wet side, like our partner 32, will be utterly unsuitable for Spyrograss rangeland, but ideal for water reclamation. If we try to alter our wind patterns, we'll set up an environmental catastrophe.
Would anyone even notice a catastrophe?
The Tal sat with his large lower pair of eyes shut, his small upper pair blinking slowly.
Rangeland needs more water than you seem to think. With all due respect,
he nodded up the table to Leia.
Not only here, but in other areas, we cannot depend on mined groundwater. It's saturated with soluble toxins and costly to pump.
While we're here,
A Hodin plant development specialist rested his off-green forearms on the tabletop. His long legs almost didn't fit under the conference table.
I would like to petition for Sector 4 of the reclaimed marshlands. I have several promising vegetative species under development.
I apologize for interrupting my esteemed colleague, the cereals specialist put in, but Sector 4 was promised to the Grains Project.
And where's Kriar?
The meteorologist Sidris Kolb spoke Leia's mind. So far, Dr. Dacid Kriar had missed every one of these weekly meetings. Not that I blame him, Leia thought wryly, watching the Hodin pass her datapad back to her personal aide, a Bella Oldsong. At each meeting, they downloaded their current research into Leia's administrative files. Kriar, a plant geneticist, sent his reports via his own datapad. Leia had known many truly eccentric people, whose brilliance showed not only in their results, but in odd personal habits. Zakariz Ghent, the slicer-turned-intelligence expert, came to mind. Fired by her vision of creating a haven for refugees who'd lost everything but their lives, and could yet lose even that, Leia had agreed to work as a liaison between this bickering gang of researchers and Selkor back on Coruscant. The researchers were happier alone in their labs, or surrounded by a few subservient techs. She didn't put her name on that weekly report. She was sick of dealing with Coruscant's new breed of bureaucrats and their veiled condescension. They could find her if they tried hard enough. Leia couldn't fault Kriar's techs for their devotion. His most recent breakthrough, cooperating with the distinguished microbiologist Dr. Willowalt, had been a bacterial sludge capable of top-fermenting tanks of toxic, pollution-laden water pumped out of the swamps. It digested the leavings of Imperial war factories, leaving rich organic sediment and a gaseous factor they could collect and use for fuel. Under Kriar's supervision, refugees were pouring local-made duracrete into Selkor-imported forms, dividing sectors of the toxic marsh that Gateway Dome surmounted. They'd created six miniature ecosystems, cleansed six half-click squares of marshland, added tons of cleansed soil-building material, and created Duro's first arable croplands since the Duros left the surface. No wonder Kriar didn't take time off for staff meetings. He probably was as tired of bureaucracy as Leia was herself. She had wrung a hefty Selkor budget out of the New Republic's advisory council as her payment for traveling to the Hapes Cluster and begging for the Hapen's military aid, her own contribution to the Centerpoint disaster. Mustn't think about that. It wasn't her fault. Wasn't even Thrakken's, really. No one had intended to see the Hapen fleet wiped out. It all came down to communication. It bothered her that the paired settlements could barely keep the cables intact. How could she supervise a planetary reclamation project, a symbol of rebirth amidst all this death and loss, when no other settlement reported to her scientists on a regular basis? Her cereals man turned to the elderly microbiologist. What we really need, he suggested, is a strain of microbes that will digest particles out of the air. Then we could take down the domes and move out onto the surface.
That's true, Leia said dryly. Until we scatter, we're sitting flinks for Yuuzhan Vong sharpshooters.
The cereals man's bushy eyebrows shot up. How like a scientist, she reflected. So involved in his own project that he'd forgotten the galaxies staring over his shoulder. Abella Oldsong finally finished taking Leia's datapad around. Adjusting her pale blue shoulder wrap, she handed the datapad to Leia, who eyed the readout, then saved new information before returning it. As usual, Kriar's file was longest. All this would go into her weekly burst for Selkor. She nodded to her aide, who hurried out with the datapad.
Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedules. Remember, Leia added somberly, Anything we do at cross purposes not only slows our effort, but wastes the resources Selkor is willing to send. Gateway and 32 were already at odds, co-opting each other's shipments whenever they could. I'll see what I can do, she promised her rangeland manager, about getting you a freighter load of those inorganics.
Thank you.
Aj Koenis, the Tals, opened one large eye to glare at meteorologist Kolb. Leia emerged from the research building, which was an elegant prefab shipped in by Selkor. Her own office, due south in the cylindrical admin complex, would take a good stiff walk to reach. She wanted to move and think. Bespican followed at a distance, happiest when she ignored him. That way he could keep his mind on his sworn obligation to protect her. She strode down Main Street, as they'd taken to calling it, swinging both arms. Gateway had been erected on the ruins of Teyana, an ancient Duros mining city. Under the new refugee huts, two upturned rock layers came together, one relatively soft and one exceptionally dense. Leia hoped to convert the old hard rock mines into shelters, in case of breaches in the dome or other emergencies. Selkor had sent two mammoth stone-chewing machines, and she'd been promised a state-of-the-art mining laser. If she paused and stood still, she could hear the big chewers underfoot. Chewers. Chewy. Leia's chest ached every time she thought of the beloved Wookiee. She strode on, frowning. She couldn't flinch every time something reminded her of his name. Naturally, it had taken a falling moon to kill the big Wook. Duro had no moon, only 20 orbital cities. On her left, an open-sided barn housed her major construction machinery, used for outside projects and new housing. Housing. She'd been warned to expect an influx of Faleen and Rodians. Not at Gateway, she hoped. That combination would be explosive. Refugee settlements were springing up all around the planet's equator. They nestled like baby Vors under the protective orbital cities, sheltered by their planetary shields. A new neighborhood lay beyond the construction barn. A few Duracrete block buildings made from her engineer's experimental concoctions. Local cement, mixed with marsh grass that had been steeped in an antitoxin brew and then heat-dried. Beyond that, a hydroponics complex gave off the unsubtle odor of organic fertilizer. She entered the admin complex by its north door, then plodded up a flight of stairs that circled an interior light well. A U2C1 housekeeping droid hummed softly, its hose-like arms sweeping back and forth, rattling with the pebbles that constantly fell out of local Duracrete. 2 stories tall, plus a basement, this building had been constructed on site by Selkor before the big ships left. Was that only 9 weeks ago? Leia opened the door of the sparsely furnished room that served her as office and quarters. Near the north-facing window, which overlooked the research building, construction shed, and a patchwork of refugee families' straggly garden plots, she'd placed the massive Selkor desk. A stranger had offered a pair of heirloom wall sconces. "I don't want to burn down our tent," she'd explained, so Leia agreed to keep them until that family took permanent housing in the new apartments Leia hoped to build. The projected Bail Organa complex. Along the left wall were her cot and a cooking unit. The refresher was down the hall. Something smelled odd. C-3PO stood beside the focus cooker. His head swiveled.
"Good evening, Mistress Leia. I am sorry. This would have been more savory an hour ago."
"Not your problem, 3PO. She sank down at the table. "I'll eat now, before it gets any worse." Whatever it was, probably soy pro cutlets beside a pile of local greens that had been overcooked to a slimy gel, probably had been tasty once.
She made appreciative noises for C-3PO's sake. His culinary programming wasn't at fault. Her meeting had gone long. He took up his usual position at the routing board, assigning incoming supplies and checking duty lists. He would spend the night working there.
"May I wonder, Mistress Leia?"
She chewed a rubbery bite.
"Go ahead, 3PO.
"If you would permit me to make a personal inquiry..."
He trailed off again. Leia thought she knew what was coming.
"Is it possible," he said, "that Captain Solo will be permanently absent from our operation? I had rather thought he might appear, or at least communicate by this time."
The soy pro stuck in her throat.
"The last time he called in, he didn't know exactly where he was going."
She eyed the protocol droid's gleaming finish. Was that a touch of corrosion on his left shoulder? She'd sent him outside the dome several times, grateful for an assistant who didn't need to breathe. Duro stink wasn't toxic to most species, but the atmosphere had gotten significantly worse over the last few decades, and now working outside without rebreathers was nearly impossible. Masking up had become habit for most of them.
"Why do you ask? Han hasn't exactly been respectful to you over the years."
C-3PO let his arms hang at his sides.
"Recently, I was given a reason to take some pride in our ongoing relationship. I was surprised to learn that on Ruin, he was greeted as something of a hero by my cyborg counterparts."
"Say that again, 3PO.
She rocked forward. "Han, a droid hero?
Where did you hear that?"
"After we returned to Coruscant."
C-3PO reached out expansively with one arm.
"There was a Holonet story you might have missed, since you were somewhat preoccupied. On Ruin, several thousand droids held a peaceful demonstration against the Salish Ag establishment, which had meant to deactivate them."
"I remember that," she broke in. "Vaguely."
Something about droids being warehoused, so that if the Yuuzhan Vong arrived, they might be presented as a peace offering. Obviously, Ruin didn't intend to resist the invaders.
"In the subtext," he said, "I found additional references to someone that the droids had called a long-awaited one, the only flesh and blood who would be able to help them. As it turned out, Captain Solo did save them from imminent destruction. In our recent flurry of activity, I neglected to mention—"
"Good heavens,"
Leia said softly.
"Whatever was he thinking?"
She'd love to rub his nose in that little tail. Actually, she'd love to rub his nose against hers. It had been so long. Did his long silence mean that an enemy had found him? But he had Droma's help now. He'd made it plain that he didn't want hers. If he was dead, and their last words had been scornful taunts, she would regret it for the rest of her life. She was almost tempted to stretch out with the Force, looking for him. No. He could be on the other side of the mid-rim by now. If she reached out and felt nothing, she would fear the worst. She finished her meal in silence, then assembled her dishes for C-3PO to recycle.
"Whatever happens, I'll take care of you,"
she promised.
"I need you."
Then she frowned at the datapad beside her elbow. Before she could turn in tonight, she had to check on the secondary rock chewer crew. She needed to make sure Abella sent off her weekly burst to the main Duros orbital city, Buru, and then renewed their request for better satellite data. Then there was Gateway's still non-functional bakery. Its staff had requested a shipment of salt and sucrose, anticipating a cereal crop. Ruin had sent this year's surplus burr millet seeds as a goodwill gesture, and then slammed the door on accepting any more refugees. Also,
Selcor still hadn't delivered that mining laser. No wonder she hadn't had time to go looking for Han. She would have given everything to see him, the way he'd been before tragedy tore them apart. He'd matured so much from the scoundrel she'd come to love, although he'd never lost the glimmer in his eyes or the quirk to his lips. Till he lost Chewie. Suddenly he was Han with the itchy trigger finger again. Han with the low-life friends. Scoundrel she could tolerate, even enjoy. All right, she admitted to herself. Scoundrel she'd adored. Over the years he'd learned to drop the defenses that first turned him into a scoundrel. He'd learned to let her glimpse his real idealism. He needed warmth in return. Over the years, slowly, she'd learned to give it. She loved both sides of him, the knight-errant and the scoundrel. But this time, she must wait until he came to her. She couldn't baby a full-grown man. At least he'd been involved in the Rin rescue episode. Unlike Han, she tried to stay current on Holonet news. His ongoing involvement with the Rin seemed like a sign of recovery. 4 hours later, she let down her long coil of hair and tumbled onto her cot. "What am I doing here?" flitted through her mind. Living with only a protocol droid for company, Bespacan and Olmok slept in the stairwell, made her feel as if she'd forgotten something critically important day after day. It really was fortunate she was too tired to worry. Much too tired. To worry too much, anyway. About him. Or the children. Her last thought was, I really should reach out through the Force for them. How many days has it been?